Welcome back to another Mackham in the Middle podcast, the first Sunderland league game of the calendar year. Obviously, 2023 was away to Blackpool, a game that I think has only actually happened on New Year's Day twice, but for some reason, it seems like it happens every year. But it was a draw away to Blackpool, a 1-1 draw. And obviously, as always, we'll get into what happened during the game, the team news, the team selections. And of course, it is January, which for football fans means one thing and one thing only, that the transfer window is open. And of course, there was one omission from the squad, from the club, to be honest, between the Wigan game and the Blackpool game, which we'll touch on as well. But first and foremost, Michael, like we said a couple of weeks ago, well, a week ago actually, wasn't it? That was when the start of the Blackburn game was. Yeah. You're looking at these three games. I think most of us kind of agreed that 7 out of the 9 points would be a good return. That's what we've got. Obviously, a win against Blackburn, a win against Wigan, and then a draw away to Blackpool. So we've achieved the 7 out of 9. But it is a little bit disappointing that the 2 points we have dropped were in this game.
Yeah, I think when we said 7 points out of 9, we initially, I think it might have been after Hull, actually, that we said this, because that was pre-Blackburn. But we kind of assumed that the draw would be against Blackburn, even though probably when you look at how Blackburn do in terms of results, we don't know why, because they don't draw games, do they? They always either win a game or they end up losing a game. I felt, weirdly enough, once we beat Blackburn, I felt the draw would come at Wigan. Now, having watched them twice, I don't know why, because Wigan look absolutely terrible. But yeah. It's one of those where, going into this game, I was disappointed not to win, but I said that if we drew, I wouldn't be totally devastated, because, as you said, 2 wins and a draw, I would have taken going into the Blackburn game without a shadow of a doubt. You just would have assumed the 2 wins would have come against Wigan and Blackpool. But, you know, as I'm sure the first half kind of proved, that if you're off it for a second in this division in comparison to League One, there's more chance of you getting punished. But yeah, 7 points out of 9 over the festive period. I don't think any reasonable Sunderland fan should be complaining with that personally.
Yeah, and obviously the one kind of bit of news before the Blackpool game, obviously this was a couple of days before that, and I'm fairly sure he was at the Wigan game, but obviously Ellis Sims, good season at Sunderland for the kind of few months that we had him. Everton are doing not great in the Premier League. They've recalled him, which doesn't really make sense for Sunderland, doesn't really make sense for Everton, and it doesn't really make much sense for Ellis Sims. And you see it all the time with young players, especially from the Premier League, where they get used as squad players and, you know, they never really get the minutes. They never really develop. The contract ends up running out and go to a League One or a League Two side. And, you know, that'll kind of be where their career is and where it stays for a while. And Sims, while he's not the kind of final product that Everton probably require him to be, if they want him to, you know, contribute towards their season, help them stay up, which at the minute is looking quite unlikely. It's a strange decision from Everton to make that call.
It just reeks of desperation. I mean, I'm someone who likes Ellis Sims a lot, and I think a lot of Sunderland fans give him a lot of unfair stick. But he's not, for right now, he's not the standard that Everton will require. And that's nothing against Ellis Sims, because as I've said, I like him a lot. But he's just not going to be, and that's a lot of pressure to put on someone who's what, 21? Is he 21 years old?
He is. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a big thing for me, to just go and shove him in at the deep end. And it's one thing doing it for us in the Championship, where the quality isn't going to be as good, but it's another thing doing it in the Premier League, where you're going to get less time on the ball, you're going to be hounded out by defenders more, you're going to find it harder to score goals, period. So that to me streaks of desperation. The only other thing I could think of, and it wouldn't surprise me if they recall Nathan Broadhead from Wigan, is that they recall them in their bid to try and sell them more and get a bit of money. And I'll quickly say then, if that is the case, I know that obviously Sunderland go on about Broadhead a lot and some fans don't like it when you go back in for ex-players. I'm personally not so much of a believer of that if the conditions are right. For me, I'd go for the pair of them. If they were both available for a reasonable fee, I would go for both of them. But that's me speculating. I don't know that for definite. Unfortunately, I don't have any insider knowledge of what goes on at Everton, so... But that's the only other reason I could think of, either that they're going to use him, which is a big, I think you said it yourself, big gamble on his career, or they're going to end up selling him, one of the two.
Yeah, and obviously everyone knew that we needed a striker anyway, and that was before Sims had gone. Obviously Ross Stewart, the contract situation, no one really knows what's going on with that, but as it stands, he is a Sunderland player, and there's there's not too much suggestion that he won't be a Sunderland player come the end of the month. But whether he is, whether he isn't, there's a lot more pressure on, you know, the likes of Kirill Louis-Dreyfus, Christian Speakman, Stuart Harvey to go out there and find not just one striker now, but two strikers.
And that becomes three if Ross Stewart goes. So, yeah, I think, I don't know whether it was Tony Mowbray or it might have been James Cotley, who was a good friend of ours, where he said that I think there's now Ellis Sims getting recalled by Everton, I think, has sort of pushed us into action a bit more to try and go out and get a couple of strikers. Because
yeah,
if you're going to put it this way, if you're going to make one good thing out of the period of 2 months where we did not have a centre forward, a fit centre forward, is that the club hopefully will want to avoid that situation again and will want to go out and make sure that we are well stocked in that position. Because as you said yourself, we need two strikers. You know, yeah, it would have been one had we kept Sims and Stewart. It's now two. And if Ross Stewart goes, we need three. Obviously, there's been talks about whether us needing another forward with Ellis Sims going, whether that is an advantage to us in our bid to keep Ross Stewart long term. You could argue either way, though, because that I think if anyone that benefits his agent, because then he goes, right, well, you're desperate to keep him, we want more money.
Yeah,
he could argue either way, but yeah, you're right, we need two strikers now. And I do trust the regime, and I think some fans need to trust them a bit more, in my opinion. But I think, you know, that I trust the regime and the recruitment team what we're doing to get adequate strikers, at least get someone who is at least as good as what Sims was, or maybe even better. And the fact we're so high in the position, so high in good a position in the Championship, could benefit that, to be fair.
Yeah. But new year, same phrase for this game. Game of two halves is, of course,
I was
that,
waiting
phrase.
For that phrase.
And again, like so many games this season, which is somewhat of a worry, is that the first half was, for large part of the first half, especially the first kind of 25 minutes of it, were very, very poor from Sunderland. Second half was realistically as good of a performance that we've had this season over 45 minutes, and I don't think there's too many people would disagree with that. But for each good half that you have, if you do have a bad half, it will end up costing you games, it'll end up costing you points, and at the end of the season it could end up costing you, you know, relegation, playoffs, automatic promotion. It can cost a lot, and at the minute that is where Sunderland are, and that is why we've only picked up 1 point out of this game.
Yeah, well, I mean, the first half, from the bits I saw of it, the start of the game, Blackpool certainly started like they were more up for it, which is the more frustrating thing, because let's be honest, we are a better team than Blackpool. We've got better players than Blackpool. We are, I think it's something like 12 points ahead of them in the table, which obviously doesn't automatically mean you have the right to beat them, of course. But I feel like if you put the application in throughout most of the 90 minutes, even if you're not as good as what you want to be, if you at least match the work rate, then it at least keeps you in the game and gives us the platform later on in the game. And certainly first half, I mean, the goal we conceded was just really, really poor. And as everyone knows, I always say it, that I think clean sheets are very important. I think if the expectations realigned and Sunderland want to get into the playoffs, then we have to start keeping clean sheets more in games. We have to stop giving goals away. I'll be lenient with the Blackburn and Wigan ones because that's an own goal, and then the other one was just a Patterson error. That happens. But this goal, I thought, was just a really poor one to concede. Thankfully, as the half grew on, I think we did get into it a bit more. But if you keep giving teams ahead to... I don't think it's been that much of a habit recently, but if you give teams a head start, as we found out in the past seasons, you know what happens, you get punished.
Yeah, and obviously that's at a much lower level as well, but that is exactly what happened. We went 1-0 down, and it's just very poor defensively from Sunderland, I think. And for what Billy Wright has contributed to the club throughout the years he's been here, and to be fair, I'd still keep him around because he's probably a very influential player in the dressing room. He knows the league. I think he captained Bristol City when he was there. Obviously under Lee Johnson, ironically. But for what we are now and where we are on the table, what we are looking to achieve and push towards, he is probably not quite at the level required to reach that goal of, you know, whatever it is, promotion, playoffs, top 10, whatever it may be. Because you look at the goal that we've conceded, he looks like he's carrying a caravan with him, chasing back to his goal there.
Carrying a caravan, I like that. Yeah, well, obviously, I'm a big Billy Wright fan, and I think if you compare him to someone like Dan Ballard, you can tell that Dan Ballard, even as a Billy Wright fan, you can tell Dan Ballard came through Arsenal's academy and has got something more about him. I think with Billy Wright, I think he's definitely good enough for, if you want to do consolidate and stabilise in this division. But I think if we are wanting to push for the playoffs, then, and especially when you couple that with Luke O'Neill playing really well there, to be fair, for the most part, and Danny Bart's had a stellar season so far before his injury, Bailey Wright would certainly be fourth choice, probably out of all of those. And yeah, that's credit to Luke O'Neill in particular. But yeah, I think Bailey Wright, he's certainly a good squad player to have. Even if we're pushing for the top six, I think he's definitely someone who can slot in every so often and help do a job. But yeah, I mean, and eventually, because I think Bailey Wright's 30 years old, is that right?
He's around that, yeah.
Around, yeah. So either side of 30, one way or the other. And eventually, we are going to want to be moving away. And I said this with Danny Bart as well. We're going to want to start moving away from them in the long run, because you want more long, he wants younger players to come in and be a more long-term suitable replacement for a couple of seasons. But yeah. Now, Bailey Wright's good enough if you want to stabilise. I think maybe if you're wanting to push for playoffs, playing him every single week is probably a bit much for him, unfortunately.
Yeah, he is exactly 30 as well. So some good ball knowledge. Yeah. But obviously it was 1-0 to Blackpool at half-time. We came out second half. I think we were unchanged at the break. And the second half, in comparison to the first, was so much better. But we did get the goal, which we'll get onto. It's just one of them days where no matter how well you play, it just wouldn't quite fall for us.
No, it wouldn't. Bits of the stream that I did get to watch, I'll not say what means I was watching the stream on, but I caught bits of the first half. I caught enough of the first half, but not the whole thing. And I think the first 10 minutes of the second half I missed. But after that, I watched the rest of the game. And Jesus Christ, I mean, Sunderland, if you want to say the first half was poor, which it was for our standards, the second half was much more like what we are capable of playing. Yeah. We dominated. We absolutely dominated Blackpool the second half. The goal, I mean, even I looked at, I think it's a YouTuber called Lee Charles, who's like a Blackpool fan on YouTube. And even when he was doing a vlog of the game, when Ross Stewart scored, he said it's been coming for the last 20 minutes. We were literally knocking on the door constantly. There was chances, crosses going left, right and centre. We were pinning Blackpool in their own third. They just did not, they could not get out of their own third. And yeah, it is just one of those days. I think what's made people a bit more content with the point, not necessarily happy, but content with it, is that second half we played like ourselves. And I think it's just one of those. Another day, Ross Stewart when he has an open goal right in front of him at 1-1, or Ahmed Diallo when Clark's cross comes into the box, they go in. And it's just one of those where sometimes that happens. Blackpool, we've got to remember, Blackpool obviously are going to be scrapping for their lives as well. So it's obviously, I think it's a better point for Blackpool than it is for Sunderland, but in terms of league position. But yeah, it's one of those. We've won the last two games, and sometimes we just have to accept, especially when we've got a young team, that days like this are going to happen.
Yeah, and I think talking about some of the other chances that we had, I think we hit the bar twice, if I'm not mistaken. Obviously, you alluded to that one where Ahmad's, I don't know whether he shot or crossed it, a bit of both, to be honest, towards Stewart. And should he score? Maybe. He gets on the end of it, but there's a lot of power behind it. And, you know, to react in that time and kind of guide the ball into the net is probably a lot harder than it actually looked to be at the time. But, you know, that's a good chance, like you've alluded to as well. The chance that Ahmad had, a very similar one where Clark's fired the ball across goal. Ahmad's probably half an inch away from getting something on it. And because of the power on the cross, if you get anything on that, it's a goal. You win 2-1, you get 3 points, it's 9 from 9. And, you know, you're even higher up the table than we are now. I think we're 8th currently. But we did get a goal, and it was Trey Hume that got the assist. I think, I can't remember if it stemmed
from... Yes, it was, because he got the header. The ball was headed out.
It was a header,
Trey Hume got the header that led to Ross Stewart's header into the net.
Yeah, and I can't remember, did it stem from a corner? Or was this just, I know it was a cross originally, but I can't remember if it stemmed from a corner.
Can't stem from a corner, we're rubbish at set pieces.
We are.
But... no, it wouldn't surprise me. It either wouldn't have been directly from a corner, or it would have just been from a play.
I can't exactly remember how it came about, but the ball comes in, it gets cleared out. Trey Hume, who's probably no taller than about 5'10", I could be wrong on that. You know, he gets up the highest, he wins the header, he flicks into Stewart, and it looks like such a simple finish, but it's not, because you look at Stewart, he's not even looking at the goal. The ball comes into him, he doesn't even have time to react. He just gets his head on the end of it. He knows where the keeper is. Keeper goes the wrong way, and it's 1-1. Sunderland get back into the game, and like we've said, unlucky not to push further and get the 3 points in that one.
No, exactly. And again, it's just like I said earlier, it's a game where like actually, like you said, no matter how well you play, it's just a day where the ball wouldn't just go in the net. You couldn't find the winner. Stewart did well for the goal because I think it's a backwards header. And that's obviously quite difficult to anticipate when the ball's coming into the 6-yard box and you have to really adjust your neck muscles accurately. But afterwards, like I said, I mean, there was the chance Ahmad put across the box where, although there's power on the shot, I think Ross Stewart will be disappointed not to have scored. But at the end of the day, we've managed to come out of it with something after a much better second half performance. And I think these players, put it this way, I think it says a lot. I think Tony Mowbray alluded to this. It says a lot that when we had a number of players apparently out ill in the build-up to this game, that we're leaving Bloomfield Road not disappointed, not to come away with 3 points. I think it tells you how good a performance the second half was, even though we didn't get the winner.
Yeah. Three of the best we'll go on to now before we have a look at the next game, which is obviously an FA Cup game, rather unfortunately or fortunately, depending which way you want to look at it. But starting with the third best for Sunderland, Michael.
I'm trying to think because I saw probably an hour of the game, so it's harder for me to really make a definitive opinion. So, I've got me three players. I just need to think of the order I'm going to put them in. If I was going with third, I'd probably go Amad Diallo. I think Amad Diallo was one where...
I think you'll struggle to have a game where he's not in the top three.
Well, that says... it says a lot of why Man United paid the money for it. Two, it says a lot about the recruitment team for spotting him and getting him in the first place. And again, three, like I've alluded to this a few times, it's a shame he's not going to be here next season. Hopefully he's here second half of this season. Hopefully we don't suffer the same fate with Diallo that we did with Sims. But Diallo, I think especially second half, even in the first half when he skinned one of the Blackpool players going into the box and hit the bar towards the end of the first half. And then second half, he had them on toast. Nearly every time he was going forward, he was linking up well with, say, Patrick Roberts or whether it was Trey Hume or whoever it was. He was just having them completely on toast and Blackpool could not live with him.
Yeah. Second of the three.
For me, again, from what I saw, Trey Hume. I think Trey Hume's starting to look really, really good. If his last few performances are anything to go by, then I'm going to have to change my opinion saying I wanted to loan him out in January because I wanted to get him.
It's been a weird one with Hume because, like I said on Twitter, I don't think whenever he's played, people always kind of pick him out as he had a good game or he did this well, he did that well. And I think there might have been the odd game. I think he played against Rotherham in League One when we drew at home and he got caught out a few times. But again, I think that was probably his second or third start since he signed for us. And he hasn't had many. He rarely comes off the bench, and sometimes he's not even on the bench, but he always seems to put in a pretty good performance, if not an excellent performance, like he did against Blackpool.
Well, yeah, and even the game you mentioned against Rotherham, that was against a Rotherham team that was probably one of the most physical teams Sunderland will ever come up against, or that he'll come up against, and that was a Rotherham team that was going for top two at the time in League One when we played them. Whereas in other games, I mean, this season when Trey Hume's played, I think he's looked solid. I really can't remember a very bad game he's had. I think against Rotherham he got overwhelmed, but even in last season when he first came in, I think there was that run where we lost to Cheltenham and we drew at Wimbledon, and a lot of the players, to be honest, weren't very good. And I thought he wasn't one of them. I thought Trey Hume looked all right. So it's one of those where, again, another good decision from the recruitment team. I think it was 200,000 we paid for him.
Around that, yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, if he develops into someone half decent, then, you know, I think we're on course for a good player there. Obviously, he is going to have dips. He is going to have games where he's not as good. But if this is anything to go by, I'll tell you something now. Lyndon Gooch is going to have to really work hard to get his place back in the team. And that's how it should be. Trey Hume either needs to be playing for us regularly or he needs to go out on loan. And if he continues this vein of form up, say, 7-8 times out of 10 throughout the season, then don't loan him out. Keep him in. Start him.
Yeah, and obviously you talk about the recruitment team there and how we've, you know, Ross Stewart, 250,000, rumoured to be about 10 million player now. You've got Trey Hume, 250,000. If he plays a couple of games, plays well in the next few games and, you know, carries that out throughout the rest of the season, whether he's at Sunderland on loan to a Championship club or a League One club, you're probably looking at 10 times his value as well. You've got Dan Ballard for 2 million. He's going to go on to be a Premier League defender, there's no doubt about it. Probably 5 times his value at least. Everyone that's come in from the recruitment team have improved, the value's gone up, and it makes such a difference from what we've been in the past. And that is probably the bit of hope that people should take, the fact that we only have Ross Stewart as a striker. We are going to be looking to bring at least one more in, hopefully two. And if there's ever been a time in Sunderland where you would trust the ownership and the recruitment team to get it right, it's now.
Exactly. And look, don't get me wrong, they have signed some duds. There's been some ones where they haven't been as good. But that's every, not every recruitment team is going to get every single signing spot on 100% perfect. But for the most part, I just don't, some, I'm going to go on a bit of a rant here. I mean, some people obviously just don't seem to trust them whatsoever. And it's particularly with Speakman, and I just don't understand it. I don't understand. And to be, they're entitled to that opinion. Of course they are. But for me, I just don't get it. I think it's very misplaced when you see, people seem to be determined to have a go at the recruitment team no matter what it is they do. And if you actually look at the plate, like you mentioned there, Trey Hume, we signed for what, 200,000. If he keeps this up over the next couple of seasons, and bearing in mind we signed him a year ago on a 5.5-year deal with the option of an extra year, I think. So we've gotten, after this season, we've gotten for another four. If, say, in another 18 months, he's improved considerably, he's going to be worth good money. Then Ross Stewart, as you alluded to, I think it was £300,000 we paid, £10 million player now. Obviously, the criticism with Speakman is how hard are we trying to keep him in terms of money. Then Jack Clark is another one, £4 million, I think, was it, that came in. £7 million if we go for the next two seasons. But I'll tell you right now, if it, again, second half, I thought Jack Clark was pretty good. So if he improves, then his value is going to go up considerably. Dan Ballard, as you mentioned, Dan Neal was brought through. I know we didn't buy him, but he was brought through. So there is a lot of good players there. There's a lot of good things the recruitment team's got right. If we have a good January window, then there's no reason why we can't at least push for just outside the playoffs. There's a lot. I can't believe I'm this positive. It's one of the things we're never used to. Look, there are things the recruitment team are going to get wrong. There are mistakes they have made. If I'm going to be nuanced, I have to mention that. But I think if you're going to be equally nuanced, then they've got to be given more credit than what I think some fans are willing to give them.
Yeah. And last but not least, number one of the best of three.
Yeah, I think for the second half, I think Stewart again. I think it's one of these things that I'm just expecting this of Stewart every week now, where Stewart is good at linking up the play. He did well for the header, for the goal. Was probably unlucky not to get a second one himself. And like I keep saying, a deal from both sides has got to be agreed, surely. But I'm getting bored of saying it now. Yeah. Just sort it out.
Hopefully very soon. But of course, next game is, like I say, fortunately or unfortunately, that's a hard word to say for some reason today, is
if you try to say them both together in close proximity.
It is quite hard, yeah. I'll not do that again. But next game is Shrewsbury away. Thought we'd left them type of teams behind, but of course we get drawn against them away in the FA Cup, which is just the Sunderland way. And I know we've had Mansfield back-to-back. Was that in the FA Cup?
Yes, the last two seasons it was in the first round at home.
Yeah, because we very rarely get home cup games that I've noticed. Obviously, the Mansfield are somewhat anomalies, but so many of the cup games that we've had have been away. I mean, just thinking of them, I think some of these Carabao Cup as opposed to FA Cup. I don't think we've ever done well in the FA Cup recently, but Arsenal was away.
Sorry to interrupt you, but to be honest, the Carabao Cup, I think the last 2-3 seasons, I think every single time
we've
had
it. Yeah, it seems like it, yeah. That might have been the cup I'm thinking about. We've got Arsenal, Burnley, Sheffield United. I can't remember who else we played in that run.
Oxford, QPR. Yeah. Sure, I think there was another one. Who was it? Port Vale last season. There was a Wigan again. You know, Blackpool, where after they got promoted. So yeah, I can't remember the last time we've ever had. Well, to be fair, we draw this game and we get a replay, don't we? So that's one thing.
Not the best thing to be hoping for, I don't think. But
no, that's nonetheless. Draws the one result I don't want from this game.
Yeah. But like we said, it's Shrewsbury away to FA Cup, and you know, it's kind of a 2-week break from important football, I suppose. Everyone likes a cup run, but I think with kind of the position that we have on the table, the injuries that we have, especially, you've got what, 5 first team defenders out injured, I think, off the top of my head. You've got Sirkin, Elise, Danny Bart, Gooch. And I think that's it. Huggins as well, injured, so they're 5. Like I say, you've got one striker. So if anything, this is a chance for the likes of Jefferson Bennett to hopefully get a start, Abdullah Bar to get a bit more game time, Michu, Dayaku, who's had plenty of game time, but you know, get him a start. This is the game where you want to see those kind of fringe players prove why they should be getting more game time in the league.
Yeah, and even if they play well and they don't get much game time in the league, someone like Diaku, for instance, if you have him play well, then it could add a bit more on his transfer fee if someone comes in for him, if I'm looking at it very cynically. But for this game, I mean, well, I think, how many ex-Sunderland players are playing for Shrewsbury? Because we've got Aidan O'Brien and Tom Flanagan.
Carl Winchester. But also, he won't be able to play against us.
He's on loan, though, isn't he?
Yeah.
Right, so if he's on loan still for Saturday, then he can't play against us, I don't think, unless we're... Actually, hang on. Could he play against us if we reach an agreement with Shrewsbury to let him do so for a fee?
I mean, you can, but I don't think many teams tend to do that. But I suppose...
No, not with... a lot. I'm only thinking of Chelsea with Thibaut Courtois for Atletico Madrid a number of years ago. But
yeah,
I mean, for me, this game's a good opportunity to get other players a rest. I mean, Ross Stewart, I don't want anywhere near... I don't want anywhere near the squad for the game. Dan Ballard. Maybe Luke O'Neill, I suppose you could get away with. Patterson, obviously, we probably don't want him anywhere near the team.
There's a lot of players that probably deserve to play. And you look at some of the younger players. You've got Chris Wigg, who, you know, he's only 15, but he was on the bench for the game against Blackpool. And to be honest, I think he would have probably come on had the game went the way that it probably should have over the course of the 90 minutes. He might have got 5-10 minutes at the end. You know, he could potentially start that game and he'd become one of the youngest players to have played in the FA Cup, especially for Sunderland. I was looking the other day, actually, at the youngest players to have ever made an appearance. And I think the youngest player must have been some non-league team, but he was 13 playing in the FA Cup, which is a lot younger than Chris Wigg. But hopefully he could, you know, whether he starts, comes off the bench, get him some game time, show him that there is a path to the first team. Zach Johnson, who's, you know, a highly rated defender, I think he's only 17. And like I say, Jefferson Bennett, who's been a strange one recently. You know, he's come back from the World Cup. He hasn't featured at all since. And even before the World Cup, he'd tend to get 20 minutes at the end of a game and not really have much time to influence what was happening. Hopefully get him 90 minutes. But like I say, there's plenty of players there that could be used in rotation for this one.
Well, there is, definitely. I mean, I'm just trying to get up the match report from the Blackpool game. I'm trying to look at all the reserve players we had. I mean, there's Jamie Tetti and Niall Huggins off the top of my head. You know, obviously, as you mentioned there, Bennett. I mean, if you look at the bench, right, we had Evans, we had Diaku, Bass, Barr, Bennett, Metetti and Rigg. So Evans is the only one I could maybe... Well, it depends. Maybe you might want to give Evans a bit of a run out. It just depends. I think in some ways this will be good for our younger players because I can imagine Shrewsbury will probably want to beat us and want to put out a stronger team. So maybe in a way it's a good thing for them to be accustomed to men's football and to get used to the physicality of men's football. So this could be used for that sort of mentality. So, but again, the likes of you, Huggins, Imitete, Bass, Bard, Diaku, Rigg, as you mentioned before, amongst other ones, there's other examples of players that you can use this, this game for development for them. And again, it just shows them from their perspective, they have to go into it thinking, right, okay, then let's show what I'm about and let's show why I should be forcing my way into Tony Mowbray's plans.
Yeah. But of course, that is the FA Cup. I think the game after that is the weekend after, which I think is Swansea at home.
You would be correct. Yes, it is Swansea. January 14th, Swansea at home.
Trying to think, when's the Middlesbrough game? Because I thought that was very soon.
That's the week after. Let me just double check that. But yeah, I know on the 4th, obviously this weekend it's Shrewsbury. Next week, yeah, Sunday 22nd of January, 12 o'clock kickoff on Sky Sports.
Just what you want, isn't it? 12 o'clock on a Sunday.
Yeah, all games on Sky. Well, we're just that massive.
Yeah, that'd be a nice breakfast at Toby Carvery for that one, I'd imagine, for me.
That's a good shout. That's a good shout.
All you can eat breakfast and a pint with a breakfast. Yes, that
you
is
just
the way
put I'm that going. Idea in my head now, actually. That might be a good shout for the game.
It is, absolutely. Can't go better. Toby Carvery before every home game. But Shrewsbury... predictions for that game before we wrap it up.
Okay. I'm not going to be as devastated if we lose this game. It depends on the performance, I suppose. I'll go 3-2 Sunderland. I've got a feeling Aidan O'Brien and Tom Flanagan do the typical ex-Sunderland player and score against us thing. It just tends to happen all over. I think it's probably a bigger game, without sounding arrogant, I know it's going to sound arrogant, it's probably a bigger game for Shrewsbury than it is for us because they'll want to try and get a bit of life for their League One campaign and beat a Championship side. But yeah, if we lose, I wouldn't be shocked, but I'll go 3-2 us.
Yeah, that is fair. With this being an FA Cup game, I can't imagine we're going to be doing too much talking about this one, whether we lose 5-0. I suppose we'd have a bit of a debate about it. Whether we win 5-0, we might have a talk about it. But if not, we will be back to talk about that Swansea game, which is going to be another tough one, another game that, to be honest, I think... Well, it's the first game of a very tough run of fixtures. I think Rotherham is right in the middle of them, which is probably the only one.
Just to point out, Rotherham can get moved if one of us or them win at the weekend, because that's the fourth round of the FA Cup, so that there's a good chance that'll get moved.
Yeah, so it could be an even harder run of fixtures, is what you're saying.
Well, yeah, well, if Rotherham exactly. If Rotherham gets moved, then I think say Rotherham gets moved, then our fixtures, depending on when Rotherham's schedule, would be Swansea, Middlesbrough, Millwall, straight away three odd games there. Reading at home, then QPR away, Bristol City at home, and then Coventry away. And then I think March is, I don't know why I'm going this far into the pod, far into the fixtures, but March, I think you've got Stoke. We all know what's going on there with Alex Neil. Norwich, Sheffield United, then Luton, then Burnley and all that. So there was a pretty on paper, a pretty difficult run of games, but it is the Championship, you know, so wait and see what happens.
Anyone can beat anyone, but hopefully that anyone is us. Of course, getting the win, not getting beat. But
yeah, well, that is true.
Hopefully yeah. That's the case. But we will be back at the very latest to talk all about that Swansea game, the team selection, whether anyone's been signed between now and then, which is obviously possibly quite likely, especially a striker, 2 weeks or so for the recruitment team to see if they can bring someone in. Few positions otherwise they are probably going to be looking at in January, but that is yet to be seen. But like I said, Swansea will be back to discuss that game. But until then, we will see you later. That's all, folks.